Make the right call for the right Medicare Advantage benefits. Go to MedMutual.com/review to schedule your free Medicare plan review with Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
This message comes from our sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TeladocHealth/whatsyourwhy.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The reality we live in can be a very strange place. Most of the time, fact being stranger than fiction. How will we ever start to understand this reality we live in unless we question everything? Join me and a guest as we unravel the mysteries of this reality, one topic at a time. This is Inquiries of Our Reality. Shane Jones.
Reality isn't what it seems. I'm Dr. D's taking aboard a craft with a tractor beam. Is life a simulation or an astral dream? Aliens travel through black holes in different galaxies. Life is a bizarre odyssey. With a mic talking about philosophy. Well, Bigfoot is stalking campers. As a Wendigo walks through the woods of sharpened antlers. Using a Ouija board to talk to the dead like a necromancer. There's so many questions and not enough answers. So if you're interested in mysteries and abnormalities, tune in and listen to Inquiries of Our Reality. So if you're interested in mysteries and abnormalities, tune in and listen to Inquiries of Our Reality.
What is up, inquirers, and welcome back to the expansive, deep, open-minded conversation. I'm the one they call Shane, and today for you guys, I have a guest that wasn't on too long ago, but we had such a great conversation last time, I wanted to have him back on for part two, and of course, digging into one of my absolute favorite topics, Sasquatch. So, I know I got a great conversation for you guys today. I think you guys are really going to enjoy diving into some of my own recent personal experiences, along with a lot of today's guests' beliefs as far as the community and everything like that goes. But before getting into that, of course, you have to go through front of house. If anyone has an encounter that they would like to report, you guys can report those to OMMEncounterReports@outlook.com. Either one, you guys can type it out, or you guys can record yourself, and you guys can email it to me. And depending on what you want to do with it, either one, I can use it for the show itself, or two, if you guys just want somebody to talk about this kind of stuff with, but you don't want your story getting out to anybody, that's totally fine too. Just let me know what you guys want to do with it. And if you guys are at a place that's somewhat close to me, I might even be able to come out and investigate it myself, but none of that will happen unless you guys report those encounters to OMMEncounterReports@outlook.com or go to the link tree and there is a specific report and encounter submission form. And if you guys enjoyed this show, don't forget to go and check out my other show, Bizarre Encounters, where we deep dive into a plethora of different topics. A lot of it is our research, but we definitely do have some guests that pop on here and there. But if you guys enjoyed this show, I definitely think you guys will enjoy that show. And there also is somewhat of a comedy aspect to it, depending on what the episode is. So if you guys dig that kind of stuff in your podcast, definitely go and check out Bizarre Encounters. And then we also do a Patreon/YouTube exclusive show that's called Bizarre Inquiries. For that one, we kind of expanded what we talked about on that one, where originally it was listener questions, but now we're starting to expand into doing clips. We're doing articles. We are still taking in questions and stuff. It's kind of our catch-all fun show. So if anybody has anything they would like to submit for us to talk about on that show, whether it's just a video clip, an article that you guys want us to talk about, or a question you guys want us to discuss, you guys can get a hold of me through social media and send all that kind of stuff over. And if you guys want to support the show, a couple different ways to do so. Number one is to go and join the Patreon. Over there, I have a $1, a $3, and a $5 tier. All of them have 7-day free trials, and there will be a lot of expanding as far as the Patreon goes. So go and sign up now and make it so that I can keep expanding it. I'd like to do some hangouts and some other stuff, but I'd like some more people to pop in for that one because I hate to go live and only have a couple people show up. So if you guys are interested in getting involved in all of that stuff and expanding the Patreon with me, you guys can go and check that out. And again, use that 7-day free trial. And the second way you guys can support the show is through the Open Minds Media merch store. Over there, it's not just podcast designs. It's a bunch of cryptid, UFO, conspiracy, paranormal related type designs. There is, of course, a handful of podcast related designs, but the majority of the show, of the shop itself, is a bunch of other non-podcast related designs. So don't think if you go and check out the Open Minds Media merch store that it's all just going to have my logo on it. It's definitely extended past that, and it's something that I want to continue pushing. One of my new designs that I did was my Reptilians for America one. I also did a Respect the Forest one with Sasquatch on it. So if any of that stuff sounds cool to you, you guys can go and check that out. I have some more designs that working on that will be hitting the store soon. And if you guys want to scoop anything for yourself, you guys can use code CRYPTID10 at checkout for 10% off. Or you guys can go and join the Patreon, and each of those tiers includes a specific promo code that is exclusive to that tier that you can only access through there. So if you guys want to get bigger discounts, you guys can always go and join the Patreon first. And the third way you guys can support the show is through leaving reviews or ratings for the show on iTunes or Spotify. Anything you guys are willing to do, I definitely appreciate it. If you guys think I deserve a rating for the show, I'd absolutely love to be able to read those 5-star reviews from iTunes and stuff on the show, but the only way the show is going to continue to be able to keep expanding and make it so I have more people coming on and sharing their encounters, and we can expand this community of inquirers and open-minded folk, is with your guys' help. So anything you guys are willing to do, even if it's sharing the show, I greatly, greatly appreciate. And if you guys want to stay up to date on the show, you guys can go and check out Inquiries of Our Reality and Open Minds Media across social media, Instagram, Facebook, Discord, YouTube, and TikTok. And every single thing that I mention is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, let's get into the show. Please welcome back to the show, Brian King Sharp from Sasquatch Odyssey. How's it going today, man?
I am good, man. How are you?
Not too bad, man. Absolute pleasure to have you back on the show. We're kind of talking a little bit beforehand about, we had some idea we were going to do for a part two, but both of us, it slipped our mind. So at least somewhat, we know we didn't get too far into the book last time. So we got somewhat of something we can get into today.
Yeah, there's always more stuff to talk about when it comes to Bigfoot, right?
That is true. I could actually probably talk about Bigfoot for hours and hours and I still not feel like I touched enough ground on it. I mean, there's enough podcasts that are dedicated to it that are on like season 10 and they're still talking about the phenomenon. So that just goes to show how much there really is to talk about, man.
I think I just posted, I've been out of pocket a little bit. I've been traveling and doing some recording for a documentary and some other things. And I think I just flicked over like 501 episodes, which blows my mind, because when I started this show, I thought there's not going to be that many people I can talk to about Bigfoot. And here we are 500 plus episodes in. It's crazy, man. The phenomenon continues. That's for sure.
I mean, it's always evolving too. That's the other aspect of it. I mean, just going from the flesh and blood to now, it seems like the majority of people kind of believe more in like the quantum Bigfoot aspect, or that there's some type of spirituality to it. It's like, there are obviously still a lot of flesh and blooders out there, but there's just so much different variety within the phenomenon that it's like, every time you talk to somebody about Sasquatch, you kind of have to get a feel for them first before you kind of figure out which way you kind of want to lead the conversation. Because if you have somebody that's strictly flesh and blood, you don't want to get into the quantum stuff. Otherwise, they're going to be like, I don't believe in any of that stuff. Sorry, man.
Yeah, I've definitely had to keep an open mind because I've talked to so many people who have had so many different strange experiences. And I was telling you before we hit record, you know, I was out in the Pacific Northwest recently, and I was recording some stuff for an upcoming documentary. And we had some really strange experiences that obviously I'm under an NDA, so I really can't get into it. Hopefully the documentary will be out in the next 8 to 10 weeks. But some of the things that happened there I'll be honest with you, it blew my mind, man. And some of the, what people consider to be woo or high strangeness that people have explained to me over the years of having these kind of experiences, I've experienced them myself, and it makes me scratch my head, man. I don't know. The woo part of it, the high strangeness part of it is something that's always intrigued me, but I'm pretty much a flesh and blood kind of guy when it comes to these things. So yeah, I'm the same as you. If you're going to talk to Ron Moorhead, he's going to get out there with the quantum physics and some of the weird things he's experienced. But yeah, I'm a flesh and blood kind of guy for the most part when it comes to these things. So
see, my whole thing with it, man, is that it's like, my opinion always changes on the matter, but obviously, like, I kind of ground back into being a skeptic more than anything, but I'm a skeptic who believes in something, at least, or has faith in the possibility of something believing. So it's like, I definitely have my ideas on what I think a phenomenon is going to be, but that doesn't necessarily mean I'm not going to take everything else into consideration. Like, if I had to guess on the whole Sasquatch phenomenon, going for, like, my most literal aspect of my mind, of course it's going to go to flesh and blood, but like you've said, there's too many people having weird experiences where it's like, I've never personally had any like crazy Sasquatch experiences to really be able to put it in any specific camp myself. Like, I've had trace evidence, stuff like that, but it's like, until I have that weird off the wall experience that makes no sense, it's like hard for me to go fully into any camp necessarily, even though I do have faith and belief in the people that are telling me their experiences and stuff, and being able to read people's, you know, what they're saying with their body as they're telling about their encounters and everything. So it's like, you see the fear in people's eye, you understand that they are experiencing something super weird, but it's like, you, of course, again, make your own rational conclusions in your own mind, but you still have to take all this stuff into consideration.
Yeah, definitely, man. And I've had so many experiences that I can't explain. And again, I wish I could talk more about some of the experiences I had in the Pacific Northwest. But it's until you have that one experience that takes you beyond, because I think we talked about it a little bit the last time I was here. I'm very skeptical when it comes to stories and people's experiences. But when you have that one experience that takes you from the experiencer to the I want to believe to the knowing, it's indescribable, man. I really don't even know how to put it into words at this point. But so many people have weird experiences that can't be explained. I mean, one of the things that's always fascinated me, and I don't know if we talked about this a little bit before in the previous episode or not, but some of the people who have habituation situations, it's been one of those things that has always fascinated me, is you have these people who say, we've got a group or a family of Sasquatch living on our property. And the amount of experiences people have with these creatures, I couldn't imagine, right? I mean, I have found footprints on our property. I've heard vocalizations. I've had rocks thrown at me. I've had other things that I've experienced. But when you have these things living in close proximity to you and your family, that's one of the weirdest things about this phenomenon that it's hard to wrap your brain around. And one of the things that has probably one of the most fascinating things about it is these people who claim to have these experiences. I always say, one of the first things I say to them is, do you have documentation of these experiences? Because if you're living with a group or a family of Sasquatch in close proximity on your family's property, you should have photos, you should have video, there should be some sort of evidence. And it's almost, at least in my experience, it's rare that they have anything. So it goes back to the anecdotal experience. That's pretty much all we've had. Have you had a different experience? Have you talked to people who have had sort of this habituation situation that have had close proximity, close encounters with these things? And have you seen any evidence that has compelled you that they're having the experiences that they're sharing with you?
I mean, not personally, as far as any type of like physical evidence goes. Again, like you said, it's all mainly just people talking about their experiences and talking about their encounters. I mean, the closest I've seen is basically like footprints around like, you know, the places where people try to use as like the giving point or like the trading point with them. But other than that, it's like they claim that they've seen them and everything, but it's hard to know for sure. Cause I mean, even it seems like a lot of the time they come at night and the average person doesn't seem to have any type of camera that really takes video that well at night. And if they're off in the distance on their property, like it's hard to catch that depth, even if you are using, you know, night vision cameras and stuff. I mean, maybe if you're using thermo, you could definitely pick some stuff up. And I've seen some definitely fascinating like thermo evidence, but with the thermo evidence, I mean, you're kind of trying to, it's, you don't unfortunately get to see like all the characteristics and all the features and everything of it. You're just basically looking at just like a giant outline. And if you're looking at it when it has like the little scale on the side, I mean, you can get kind of an idea of how big it is, but again, it's like, you're not seeing that with your own physical eyes. So it's really hard to differentiate and like know for sure. And I mean, even the people that have them on like the edge of their property too, I mean, the other hard part about it is that you hear about people always trying to put out game cams or put all these different types of cameras in order to catch these things. And the only logical explanation I'd come up with that is that obviously those things give off like an infrared signal where it's almost like a beam that's shooting forward on them. On top of that, I mean, it's definitely like a foreign object in the woods, and that plastic, I'm sure, definitely has a smell to something and knows how to pick up on it. Or even possibly if it's like a camera that has some type of low hum or something to it, if these things are able to pick it up. But no matter how many cameras, whatever people have put out, it's like you never come across Bigfoot trail cam photos. And if you do, then as soon as you start digging them apart, they end up being like AI images. And then it kind of throws the phenomenon into a loop again, where, you know, you feel like you're actually getting somewhere with it. And then, you know, somebody maybe gets frustrated because they can't get that shot. So then they generate the shot, maybe with the best intention, but it ends up ruining the phenomenon as a whole and then puts everybody back a step.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
And we are back, so let's hop right in.
We've done shows recently. I host, in addition to Sasquatch Odyssey, I do that Bigfoot podcast. And my co-host Wayne and I were talking about recently some of the things that people put out there as far as evidence is concerned. And it's happened to me. I mean, I cast some of the best prints I've ever cast last October. It was October 19th, I think, of 2023. I came across these prints and I cast them, and it was some of the best cast I have ever seen. Right. I mean, it was one of those things where you we've experienced, and we probably touched on this on the last episode. I've heard vocalizations. I've seen tree breaks. I've seen tree structures. We've had gifting things going on the property, rock stacks, you name it. We've experienced it. And then 60 yards from the house, I cast these amazing footprints. And it's one of the things that we cover on the That Bigfoot podcast is when you have that kind of evidence, right? We all want people to take a look at it. And Jeff Meldrum and Cliff Berrickman come to mind as two of the leading authorities. I don't think there's any experts when it comes to Bigfoot because we don't know enough about these creatures to have experts. But they're two leading authorities when it comes to footprints, right? And Cliff is a friend of mine. I mean, he wrote the foreword to the book Sasquatch Unleashed, The Truth Behind the Legend. And when this happened, I was very apprehensive to show people images or show people the cast that I had cast because I was so taken aback at how great the evidence was, because they're some of the best prints that, frankly, I think I've ever seen. And when I did put it out there, I put it out in the book first and foremost for people to see these photographs of these footprints that were literally 60 yards from our house. And it's something that's come up recently. And certainly I want to get into this conversation with you, because the more I thought about it, the more I was like, okay, you know, I want people to take a look at these. I want people to make their own decision about what I've cast. But then you get into this gatekeeper mentality in the Bigfoot community, right? I mean, you basically have Dr. Jeff Meldrum and you have Cliff Berrickman, who are two of the leading authorities when it comes to looking at footprint evidence. And, you know, Cliff's a friend of mine, Jeff's a friend of mine. So I thought, I'm going to send these to them. But the second that I put out the things that I had found on our property, the first questions that came out of people's mouth was, well, have these been verified or confirmed as real by Cliff or Jeff Meldrum? And I was like, well, what does that mean? Right? Because
stamp of approval.
Exactly. There's a stamp of approval, but we're talking about an unproven species here. So what does that mean? Right? Because, and I saw this play out in real life. I was out earlier this summer with Cliff. I went out to help him run his booth in the Ohio Bigfoot Conference. I took some books. He had some, all of his stuff that he brings out from the museum. And there were some guys who brought in some footprints they had cast like 4 or 5 days earlier. And they were excited about them. They had found them in their research area, and they were excited to bring them to Cliff. Cliff pulls them out. I've got video I took of Cliff looking at these footprints. And he was impressed. He was like, holy shit, this is like really good stuff. Well, they went upstairs to Jeff Meldrum, showed him the same prints. He wasn't as impressed as Cliff. He was like, there's something off about the heel of these things. He thought they might have been manufactured. So I saw it in real time. These two juggernauts, these two people who are authorities on footprints, disagreeing in real time. So when I cast these footprints, I was like, I'm going to send them to Cliff, you know, first and foremost. So I did. And people were like, are these verified or confirmed by Cliff and or Jeff Meldrum? And I thought, if we don't have a type specimen, there's no way to really confirm anything. I mean, the quintessential evidence that we have for Bigfoot's existence is the Patterson-Gimlin film. And Jeff Meldrum, I've had Jeff on the show a couple of times, and I've talked to him multiple times in person about the Patterson-Gimlin film. He is very convinced that based on the footprint evidence that was collected that day, even far beyond the what we see on the video, Jeff is convinced that this is a real live Sasquatch based on the footprint evidence. But I'm always devil's advocate here. I'm always kind of the skeptical person and saying, what if Patty's not real? What if it was a hoax, right? So, and I saw this play out in real life in Ohio. I saw Cliff saying, yeah, this has got my stamp of approval. I think these are awesome. These look very legitimate. And then Meldrum saying, yeah, I'm not so convinced. So it's come out with my own evidence recently. I was like, you know, I'm going to send these to Cliff. What if Cliff says, these are fantastic? And then Meldrum looks at him and says, I'm not so convinced that these are real. Like, how does that play out? So, you know, it's one of those things that we did an entire show about gatekeeping when it comes to things like Sasquatch research and film, whether it be video, audio, photographs, you've cast prints, whatever the case may be. It's very interesting to me that we don't all collectively think critically when it comes to these things. I'm not an expert when it comes to bipedal locomotion like Jeff Meldrum, but I've looked at enough casts that I can say pretty succinctly that's either legitimate or it's not, right? So I don't know where you are on the gatekeeper mentality in Bigfoot, but I had a little bit of a hard time with it because I'm like, okay, I'm putting myself out there. I'm a very private person in general. And then I found this evidence that's on our property near our home and I cast it and I put it out there and I'm thinking, okay, what if Jeff says, I'm not so sure. And Cliff says, yeah, this is 100% legitimate. Where do we go from there? I mean, have you considered that when you're taking a look at what you consider to be real, or I don't know what the alternative to real is, but maybe falsified evidence when it comes to Bigfoot? How do you feel about the gatekeeper mentality when you have just a couple of people that either give their stamp of approval or not on what people are presenting? And does that keep people from coming forward with their evidence?
I definitely think that it does, honestly, because, I mean, even just being a podcaster, like, I've had my own share of weird stuff that's happened. I actually have something I haven't even really talked about on the show yet that I can share with you today at some point, but it's, like, just because of the fact of, like, who you are sometimes, it's almost like you don't want to share your evidence. I mean, yeah, the average person that doesn't want to be looked at as crazy by, like, anybody in their family, whatever. And then on the other side, if you're somebody that's into the phenomenon and you start bringing out evidence, then people are going to question your evidence. So you question whether or not you even want to put it out and get ridiculed for it in the first place. And not to talk bad about anybody that like checks out footprints, anything like that. But it's like, if you don't necessarily have a standard of comparison, you don't necessarily know where to even necessarily start. Because, you know, if you're one that you're comparing it off of was a faked one in the first place, now you're comparing every single one off of a faked one. But even on the other side, I mean, there's such differentiation even within like human feet that it's like, you know, you may be looking for these exact signs to know that it's real, but on the other side of it, there may not be all those characteristics in every single Sasquatch's foot, such as like, you know, we always look for like the mid-tarsal break. That's one of the main things you always end up looking for in definition of toes and stuff. But, you know, if these things potentially share human DNA, like it seems to come back with a lot of the testing, I mean, there might be more flat-footed Sasquatches. Not all of them may have mid-tarsal breaks. And I mean, we talk about all the different differentiations within Sasquatch that there's, just for example, like the skunk ape, you know, like the Northwestern ones. And then there's all the different like variations where they'll have more of like the muzzled nose and they'll have this and they'll have that. Like there's too many differentiations within them that show that they're physically looking different. So why wouldn't their feet also possibly carry different characteristics where, again, maybe some of them are more flat-footed than the others and some things that you're using as your standard of comparison aren't necessarily uniform across the entire species as a whole. You know, even within like human feet, I mean, look at like, you know, somebody from, you know, Europe versus somebody in the US, like I guarantee you the shaping of the foot's completely different because they've developed totally differently, or even people in Asia versus people in Africa. So it's like, if we're just using one say like Asian foot is like the standard of comparison for all of them, then if they don't line up with that, you're going to say, oh, this African footprint is fake. This footprint's fake. This footprint's fake, because you're looking for that specific thing when, again, it's not universal for the entire phenomenon. It's just for that specific location possibly.
Yeah. And that's the thing that really, like, Cliff came back when I sent him the cast. I had to go through the process, just making a mother mold to recreate these footprints is a process. So I got that done. I sent him the first cast that came out of the mold, and he was talking about toe stems and how interesting they looked on particularly the left foot versus the right foot. And he gets into all of this stuff. But again, like you said, it all goes back to, if they're basing their analysis off of a foot that might or might not have been faked, where do we go from there, right? I mean, because we don't have a type specimen to compare these things to, it's difficult to say what's right and what's not right. So yeah, it's one of those things that I think we should definitely take a closer look at and talk more about when it comes to the Bigfoot community, as these gatekeepers that we all look at, and how much of the stuff that's come out might have been looked at by the gatekeepers and said, hey, you know, I'm not so sure that's true, or if I'm not so sure that's real. And how much evidence are we missing? And how much evidence is out there of people saying, yeah, I'm just not going to bring it forward because I'm so afraid of the ridicule? Or what if somebody says what you have is fake? What do you do after that, right?
Especially if it's something on your property too. I mean, you're the only one that knows the truth about it necessarily if you're the person that's bringing in a footprint off of your property. So it's like, if you live on an area where there's no neighbors for miles, there's nobody that walks around, you know, you live in an area where it's like you don't go on other people's property, otherwise you might get greeted with a bullet. You know, if you find a random footprint in the middle of your property there, it's like, you know, in your mind that it's real. There's nobody that could have been on your property and placed that. But if you take it to somebody and they say, oh, I think this is fake, I mean, a million different ideas circle around in your mind. Either one, there's somebody messing around on your property, or two, you know, it's legitimate, but it wasn't looked at as legitimate. But more often than not, I feel like in those specific areas, if you find a giant footprint in the middle of your property and nobody's around for miles and miles, there's no other answer about it. Like, there's not just random people with giant feet running around in your woods barefoot. Like, that doesn't make any sense. But like, only you know the truth on that one if you take it to somebody and they say that it doesn't look like a real footprint to them. But the other hard part too is that it's like, judging on how old the footprint is, like, of course you're going to get those almost perfect footprints on like the side of like a riverbed or somewhere where there's wet soil where it'll actually squish in. You might actually get some toe patterns and stuff, but if it's like dry soil or partially like loose and dry soil, they step into it, it may have that outprint and that shape, but it's not going to have that definition. And just because that it more than likely, I mean, that could be definitely be a 100% real footprint, but it's not going to get confirmed as so just because of the fact that there wasn't the opportunity for there to be that hard, firm definition where you can see the mid-tarsal break, or you can see toe definition, or you could see like hair kind of splitting the mud left and right to make it look like the foot was hairy around the outside. It's like you wouldn't get that depending on the condition, but it doesn't necessarily discourage it from being real or fake. It's just the medium in which the footprint happened in.
Yeah, and I've cast probably at this point 6 or 7 different prints, and these were by and large they were the quintessential print. It was the perfect storm of moisture and the substrate where I captured these to be perfectly preserved for me to be able to cast the footprints. And it's very much like you said, you know, there's so many things that go into capturing that kind of evidence that, you know, again, it goes back to, you know, I look at like the dermal ridges. I've been doing some research for my own show recently, looking at Jimmy Chilcutt and some of the dermal ridge evidence in the past with some of like the Onion Mountain, I think it was, cast that had these dermal ridges. that were one of the things that made people really pique their interest and look at footprint evidence when it comes to Bigfoot. But there was a gentleman, and his name escapes me at this point because I haven't done the research in the last couple of weeks because I've been traveling. But this guy actually took the time to say, you know, I'm not sure about these dermal ridges. And he did some experiments to recreate what people believe to be dermal ridges in these prints. And he was able to do that to the point where I think it was in like 2000 or maybe 2001 or something along those lines. He was able to take some of these recreated Sasquatch footprints where he had recreated the dermal ridges in around to some of these Sasquatch conventions, to the point where I think Daniel Perez named him Bigfooter of the Year for recreating the dermal ridges that other people thought were indicative of a real Sasquatch. So, you know, it's one of those things where when you get deep into the subject and you look into some of the things that people consider to be the end all be all for, well, this can only be a biological creature, you know, it really is one of those things where if you work hard enough to disprove what certain people are saying, can you do it? Yeah, this guy, I mean, it took him several tries, but he was able to recreate these alleged dermal ridges in these prints, and it fooled a lot of people. So I think we have to be careful, in my opinion, when it comes to presenting evidence and showing evidence to I don't like the word expert. I don't think there's anything remotely close to a Sasquatch expert because everything's subjective. But when you're looking at people who are looking at these things, if one thing is off, then everything else that comes after that is off. Because if one thing is faked, then everything you're looking at, even the mid-tarsal break and some of the other things that comes up in the footprint evidence, is open to interpretation. So I don't know. It's one of those things that's really bothered me about evidence because it kept me from putting forward my own evidence. So I know other people out there probably have footprint evidence. They may have cast, they may have photographs, they may have video of these things that prevent them from coming forward and saying, this is what I've captured. So I say, look, you got to be brave when it comes to this stuff. You have to put your stuff out there. You have to be ready for the ridicule. I've certainly gotten my share of it since I put these footprints out there, but I frankly don't, at this point, I don't give a shit, to be honest with you, because I know I have 40 acres in the middle of nowhere in North Carolina. Nobody is walking around barefoot with a 13 and a half inch foot that's 5.75 inches long, 60 yards from my house making these prints. Something had to do that other than a person. And I was lucky enough to find it. So that's ultimately what it boils down to for me, is just being brave enough to say, this is what I found. This is what it looks like. And whether you believe me or not, it is what it is. Because I think that's ultimately what's going to take this further down the field as far as the research is concerned.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break. So stay tuned. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
I know, I see it all the time. I go and speak at conferences, and I talk to people who have evidence that they just don't want to share with people. You know, so many times people have come up and said, look at this video, or look at this photograph from a trail cam, and they don't want to share it to anybody else. They listen to my show. They trust me enough to know that I'm not going to share their information with other people. And I see this stuff and I'm like, holy shit, that's a Bigfoot. But nobody else ever sees it because of the ridicule factor. And sometimes that's what it really boils down to, is people just want to show it to people that they trust enough to know that they're not going to be ridiculed. and then nobody else ever sees it. And then some of the other stuff that we see out there is just, it's clearly faked. I mean, you brought up AI earlier. I mean, as AI continues to improve, I think it's just going to be tougher and tougher and tougher for people to make out what's real and what's not. But I don't know, man. It's just, I feel like I'm rambling, but it's just one of those things that when you move to the point, and some of the things that I experienced in the Pacific Northwest over the last couple of weeks has moved me down the field from, I want to believe this is true to, I know this is true. But there's so much in between for so many other people that don't have those kind of experiences. It's just really difficult with the evidence at hand to push the ball down the field for those people that haven't had that kind of experience that takes them from possible believer to knower. I don't know. It's just, it's a really tough place to be, man. But I think there's plenty of stuff out there, but we as a community tend to eat our own in so many ways that it stops people from bringing that evidence forward. And then we're just left with the scraps, basically, is what it boils down to for me.
Oh yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, a lot of the time too, it's like, even if you have the right recording evidence too, or you have the right equipment for recording, you still don't end up getting necessarily like what you're experiencing at the time. Like I told you, I was going to share with you my recent experience. So, there's a friend of a friend who he owns some church property. It's all private property. And he was mentioning how when he went out to take out the garbage at night, was moving around outside, that he would just kind of catch things. Like he felt like something was watching him. Somebody didn't say, have something throw rocks at him. So we ended up getting me and a couple other buddies together to go and end up doing a Squatch hike and check out this property. So we went out with like a bigger group at first. And I'm not a big fan of like the bigger groups, just because I feel like when you have too many people in one spot, like you just never end up getting activity. So we went through the first time, we had like the guys that were serious about it, kind of staying back a little bit. The guys that were just kind of going for the fun hike because they were on private property and friends and stuff, they were kind of staying up towards the front. Didn't get too much on that first round. But then the second round, all the guys that were serious about it, we went back out, and there was only like, I think, four of us all together in that group. And when we went through back through the second time, actually on the first thing that we did kind of get, but I don't know for sure because I wasn't able to catch it fully on my camera, was the guy who was, we were on his property. He said that he saw something big move up underneath this little like clearing of trees. And when we went down to go up underneath there, there wasn't really anywhere to like let out from. And there was a couple guys that said they saw something move that was big back there, but we didn't hear any sound. We didn't see it go anywhere. So we kind of just threw it off temporarily. So then going back out later, there's a couple of like deer blinds that are on the property. And the first time we went around, it's all like swampland. And then there's like paths and everything that kind of go through it. And the first time we went around, we didn't pick up any weird smells, didn't pick up anything off or anything. But the second time we went back around, we got up to the first deer stand. And as we're getting close to that first deer stand, we're picking up this like musty, swampy, thick, musty, gross smell. And it wasn't there the first time, even though we'd walked fully around the path. And it was only in just this one little area that we're picking up on that smell. But the other weird part that was happening while that happened was that we weren't hearing any bugs anymore. We weren't hearing any frogs. We weren't hearing anything. Everything went completely silent when we were smelling that. So we kind of just sat around quiet for a little bit. And when noise started picking back up, we were like, all right, let's keep walking down the trail. So we started walking back down the trail. And on the one side of the trail, there was all kind of went into the woods, but it was kind of swampy a little bit. And on the other side, it went straight up into a swamp. So as we're walking down the path, I started hearing splashing around in the water. So I kept telling everybody, stop, stop. And I kept hearing more splashing. So then we started hearing a woo, woo, woo. It sounded like it was coming from the middle of the swamp area. And I was like, no, that's kind of weird. Like, but I don't know for sure like what that is or anything. But then everything went silent again. And then we were hearing a little bit louder of like a woo, woo. But it wasn't like a full blast woo. It almost sounded like it was like a slight communication, but they were trying not to be too obvious. But the weird part about it was that it was private property. Otherwise, I would have assumed that maybe it was somebody out there. And over on the other side, again, it was all swamp. Like the guy that owned the property said, there's, as soon as you step 5 feet off the path, it turns into a couple feet of like swamp water. So there wouldn't have just been some random guy back there messing with us, yelling woo, woo, woo on private property. So it's like not anything super solid that we got our eyes on anything, but it was just like the smell, this faint little like splash with the whooping sound and everything. But even though I had everything recording, it's like you won't really pick up on it unless you were there. But it's just little evidence like that. It's like, it kind of defines it for you yourself when you're out here, you're doing all this stuff and you're experiencing stuff like that. But if you try to share stories like that and you don't have, like, you know, perfect audio recording of the noises you were hearing and all of this kind of stuff, then it's like people take it with a grain of salt. But again, even being like a podcaster, it's like, I don't necessarily always like sharing the experiences I have when I go out, because I don't want to be ridiculed for it because, you know, oh, the Sasquatch guy caught Sasquatch evidence. Who would have known? But a lot of the time people don't realize, it's like the people who get out are the ones that get the evidence. The people that don't are the ones that don't get the evidence. So of course the Sasquatch people are going to get the evidence because they're making the effort to go out and actually put themselves in that experience. But there's always just going to be the internet who's going to tear every single experience apart. And I don't think there's ever going to be solid proof for anybody. Like, even if you put a body in front of people, I think people are still going to say, oh, it was created by this, it was this. It could have been like some weird mutation that happened with a person. Like, people are still going to play it off, even if you have a solid body in front of you. So until, like, we live in the day where you can go to a zoo and you can just see a family of Sasquatch, I don't think anybody's going to believe the phenomenon, no matter how solid of evidence you have. It's just a matter of, like, people have had experiences, know or believe or have faith that there is something out there because they haven't necessarily seen anything physically yet. But once you physically see something, there's no going back. But to everybody else who just kind of listens to the podcast, all of that, but they never actually put themselves in that position to actually experience something, like, they're never going to get to that next level of knowing or fully believing. They just kind of entertain it as an idea that it could be a possibility and could possibly be out there. And it's more of like a mind experiment than like an actual physical thing that they're out here trying to look for.
Yeah, that's one of the things I've had conversations with people in the past, is like, why haven't we found bodies? You know, there's so many people looking for Bigfoot. We should have found it by now. And I'm like, you know, to be quite honest with you, there's probably, I mean, and this number is clearly subjective, I don't have anything to back this up, but just the probably 1,000 episodes of thousands of interviews I've done at this point with people, there's probably 200 to maybe 250 people that are really invested in this phenomenon, that are looking for these creatures on a daily basis or weekly basis or monthly basis. So the fact that there are millions and millions of acres of places where these creatures could exist, and you may have conservatively 100 to 150, maybe 200 people that are looking for these things on a regular basis to try to find evidence of their existence, is a very small, minute portion of our overall population. So that's one of the things that comes up often. People say, well, why haven't there been bodies found? You know, people are looking for these things. You would think there would be more evidence, but not really, because by and large, the majority of the people, let's just take the continental United States, most people think that these things don't exist. So being out in the woods looking for evidence of their existence or looking for the actual creature is almost unheard of. And that's one of the things I wrote about in the book, is I think it was chapter 12 of Sasquatch Unleashed, the Truth Behind the Legend, my new book. I talk about, can we convict Sasquatch in a court of law? And by that, I mean, you mentioned it earlier, if somebody is accused of a crime and you have two witnesses, just two people said, yeah, I saw Joe. He punched Steve in the face. Steve's going to jail, right? I mean, you got two witnesses saying, yeah, they were in an argument, and Joe was like throwing his hands up saying, dude, I don't, you know, whatever. And then Steve was like, bam, I punched him in the face. If you got two people saying Steve punched Joe, Steve's going to go to jail or he's going to get a fine. So if you look at the phenomenon of Sasquatch in totality and just the collection of evidence, you go back to, say, the 1950s, like 58, you look at the Jerry Crew footprints, and although, you know, a lot of that stuff is said to be faked, some of those are believed to be real. And you go fast forward 10 years to 67, you look at the Patterson-Gimlin film, you look at the 90s, I think it was 92 when Paul Freeman captured his footage, and then you just continue to go down the line. There have been so many accounts of these things being real. People seeing the evidence, the video evidence, the photographic evidence. My point in the book was, if you look at the totality of the circumstances, and that's what it's really all about for me, is the totality of the circumstances. If you look at the totality of the circumstances for the existence of Sasquatch, could we convict Sasquatch of being real in a court of law? Hands down, I think yes. The answer is absolutely, unequivocally yes. These things exist. Whether you've seen them or not, whether you believe the majority of the anecdotal accounts, do they exist? Absolutely. But the lack of physical evidence for a lot of people is a difficult thing. And it was for me for a long time until I had my own experiences that moved me from, yeah, I'm on the fence, I want to believe, to I absolutely believe because I've had these experiences that have pushed me forward. I don't know. How do you feel about that as far as the evidence that's out there, whether it be photographic, whether it be anecdotal, whether it be video? How do you feel about the existence of Sasquatch for yourself? I don't know that you've ever seen one. Can you take the totality of the circumstances with the evidence that's been presented for their existence for your own benefit or whatever the case may be? Can you take a look at what you've seen out there and be convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that you could convince Sasquatch of its existence based on what you've seen in a court of law?
I mean, yeah, me personally, yes. I mean, kind of up in the air as far as like the interdimensional quantum side of it goes, but regardless, there's something out there. People are experiencing something. It's just a matter of what it is, what exactly it's, where exactly it's coming from, how exactly it functions, but it's not necessarily a question of if something's out there. And I mean, regardless if people necessarily believe that it exists now, I mean, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of old stories that have existed with the natives and with this and that, making reference to these things. So, I mean, even if they don't necessarily exist now, they've existed at some point. There is enough evidence that there has been these beings at some point. But for me personally, like, I know that they're out there somewhere. And that's where I kind of go back and forth between like the quantum slash flesh and blood side, is because it's like the way that I would assume things would function in the world. I feel like they're physical to some extent. The intelligence factor still comes in on whether or not they have the mental capacity and intelligence to almost function like a human, but function as like a natural version of a human almost, where we've kind of gravitated towards technology and cities where these things have been totally fine and completely happy existing in nature and just staying away from us. And I mean, that's the other side of it too. People don't want to believe because there's not enough sightings, but I mean, there's thousands of them everywhere. On top of the fact that if you're something like this that exists in the woods, that you've noticed that every experience you have with a human usually ends with them trying to chase you down, shoot you, this, that, then why are you going to stay anywhere near humans? I mean, it seems like any animal that's mildly intelligent, the more a city gets built out, the farther these things go out. And I mean, once they start running out of food, then yes, they start coming in. But I mean, assumably these things are in such deep woods that they're just going to keep going farther and farther out. And I mean, even for like a lot of people that don't want to believe, I mean, I'm kind of curious how many people have had Sasquatch experiences, but they don't believe, so they just completely push it off. Like they went to go take out the garbage at night and they had a rock thrown at them. They're like, oh, you know, must have been something that fell from a tree, and they just completely brushed it off. Or on both sides of it, where, you know, a hunter thinks that he saw a bear, but it may have actually been a Sasquatch. But on the other side, you know, maybe they saw a bear thinking that it was a Sasquatch. Like it could go both ways on that. Like there's way too much within the phenomenon that I full well 100% believe in this kind of stuff, regardless if, you know, people want to say that like it's woo-woo, it's this, it's that, it couldn't exist. like there's more of an explanation behind everything. And I don't think people want to dig into it enough. Like you brought up the bodies enough times. And the whole thing with the bodies for me is that I think that there's two options with it. Either one, if there's an intelligence factor to these things, who's to say they don't have some type of burial rites just like humans do, where anytime something dies, it's not like, you know, of course, you know, somebody gets lost in the woods, the body, they can't find the body, they can't find the person, or somebody gets murdered, but that's like a human factor all on its own. You know, if these things are actually something that live in tight-knit groups and they're actually having human intelligence and they don't have that means where they're going to get lost in the woods and just be like a random body that's found in the woods one day, then of course, you know, they're going to take them, they're going to rebury them. And I mean, even with that though, I mean, people take in enough nasty stuff for all the food and everything that we eat that, you know, of course there's going to be stuff that's going to eat us, but it may not be as tasty as a treat as like a Sasquatch body, for example, where like if you have something that's all completely natural, has no additives, has no growth hormones in it, nothing like that, then it's like a buffet for everything in the woods. So if a Sasquatch body drops, it's like food for so much stuff all at once that either one, it gets completely eaten by everything all around it, or two, these things are burying each other. I mean, I feel like there's so many different factors that could go into all of the different reasons why people say that these things don't exist that people don't want to logically think about why this could be happening. And I feel like that's more of an explanation than, oh, they just don't exist at all just because we haven't found a body. It's like, how often do you find a cougar body in the woods? How often do you find a bear body in the woods? But people aren't looking into those and saying they don't exist. It's just a matter of, again, you know, with a bear, a lot more sightings because they're not as intelligent as we assume for them to be. But for Sasquatch, there is an intelligence factor to them, so they have the knowledge to know to stay away from people. And I mean, even within the animal kingdom all on its own, I mean, how many deers have gotten smart enough to know that there's like preserve areas where they won't get shot in, so they purposely will stay within those areas? I mean, if you have an even more intelligence factor to a Sasquatch, and deer are already smart enough to know that humans won't shoot at you in this specific area, bring it to a whole other level with Sasquatch, and then there you go. Like, that's why these things are never seen, is because they're smart enough to know where to stay away from. I mean, just like people. I mean, assumably too, if these things have been living forever, even if they don't necessarily read English, you know, if you see something that says like hunting area, or you notice that this certain symbol that has like this thing that looks like a gun with like a cross through it means that nobody can shoot in this area, you can learn symbols and you'll go, okay, I know that we can stay in this area because humans are not allowed to have guns in this area. So let's go deep into this area. Like, I'm sure that over the years they've picked up on human symbols for trails and things like that too.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Hey guys, I know nobody really wants to listen to ad breaks on podcasts, so instead of actually listening to those, why don't you go and check out some of the sponsors and affiliate links for the show instead? Number one, you guys can go and check out I Know Squatch for all of your squatchy gear needs, or you guys can check out Cryptoteology for all of your wearable cryptid favorites, or you guys can check out Snarly Yao for a fantastic natural line of beard oil, beard balm, beard shampoo, and body wash, all with an enticing woodsy aroma of smoky cedar with a hint of mint. And he also puts on a lot of fantastic events around the West Virginia area. So if you guys are in that area, make sure you guys go and check it out and see what kind of events he's putting on, because he definitely brings in an awesome group of people. And you guys can go and check out Big Ape Threads for all of their Bigfoot and cryptid related designs. And going into the affiliate links, you guys can always go and check out the newest sponsor to the show, Organite, specializing in scale model pyramid replicas, EMF protection devices, and much more. And if you guys find any pieces that you guys want to scoop for yourself, you guys can use code OMM for 10% off at checkout. And to all the paranormal investigators out there, you guys can go and check out the Chattergeist. It is the all-in-one paranormal investigating device. My absolute favorite. I use it every single time I go out. And if you guys have any technical questions about it, you guys can always go and hit up Barry over there in Dimension Devices on Instagram. He's the guy that programmed and developed it, so he'll be able to answer any of your guys' technical questions for it. And if you use the affiliate link, you guys will receive 10% off at checkout. And just a heads up, the company is based in the UK, so when you check it out on the website, it will be in pounds. But when you guys use PayPal, it will convert over. So don't think that you guys can't scoop one just because you don't live in the UK. And don't forget to check out the affiliate link for Sticker Mule to receive a $10 credit towards your first purchase. Over there, you can get a bunch of stickers printed, t-shirts, posters, all that kind of stuff. So if you guys are another podcast and you guys are looking for good quality stuff in order to print your logos on, Sticker Mule is definitely the place for you. And more information on all of those, of course, is available down in the show description. Let's quickly run through some commercials and get back into the show. And we are back. So let's hop right in.
Gigantopithecus comes to mind. I mean, Gigantopithecus existed in Asia for 1.5 million years. And all we have in the fossil record is like two jaw bones and 1,000 or so individual teeth. And only because porcupines pulled these things into certain caves where they were eventually found. And that's one of the things that always comes up when Sasquatch, well, why have we found a body? Well, again, Gigantopithecus was a huge primate that existed clearly in the fossil record, but because of the circumstances and where they lived and the areas in which they lived, we only have two jaw bones and 1,000 or so teeth. And it's only because porcupines dragged them into these certain limestone caves to eat them that we even know that Gigantopithecus existed. So, you know, and it comes down to, again, it's a very subjective thing, but I have a show that I started last year called Backwoods Horror Stories. And I take stories that people submit and I read them. One of the most recent ones, and probably arguably one of the most controversial stories that I've read, was the story of Coda and this lady who had an experience with a Sasquatch where, I mean, it's kind of controversial, but I just say it. They had a relationship and she had a baby with the Sasquatch, and the baby was stillborn, and Coda came and took the baby and buried it. That's another part of this story, is if that is true, do they bury their dead? Because if you bury your dead, it's going to be 10 times, maybe 100 times harder to find quote-unquote bodies of these creatures in nature where you would expect to find them. But again, it goes back, it's full circle. It goes back to how many people are looking for them. I mean, I've explored our 40 plus acres here in North Carolina for years, and I've never found a body of a predator. Very rarely do I even find deer bones. So it's one of those things that You can use that as an argument against the existence of these creatures all you want, but ultimately, if you really get down to the science of where are the bodies and why, is, I mean, less than 1% of the entire fossil record of our existence exists in totality now. So, I mean, the fact that Sasquatch isn't a part of the fossil record, to me, is it doesn't hold water against the argument for these creatures existing. So, you know, it's one of those things that it goes back to, like I said, about the book. Can we convict these creatures of existing in a court of law? I certainly believe we can, based on what we've seen so far as evidence. If you just take the couple of videos that most people agree that are real, and you take the footprint evidence, you take the anecdotal experiences of thousands of people that have had experiences with the creatures, including myself, can we convict them of existing? I wholeheartedly say 100% yes.
I definitely agree with that. I mean, even too, going back to the burial thing, if you take in the whole factor of emotion, I mean, even if they aren't as intelligent, so to speak, as people, but they still feel like emotions, like, you know, you'll see it with like chimps and stuff, that like one of their babies will die and they'll carry it around for a while because they're sad, they feel remorse for it and stuff. And I mean, there's enough Sasquatch experiences that people have where they feel like these things are trying to scare them out of the woods, or they'll have these weird experiences where there'll be like some kind of predator nearby, and then they'll hear like a squatch whoop, and then all of a sudden like the predators will take off. Like, it almost seems like these things do feel sympathy. They do feel sadness. They do feel grief. So if that's the case, again, why wouldn't they potentially bury their body off of, again, not wanting to see that dead relative, so to speak? And I mean, even within like the US too, I mean, you go into like the whole giant bones thing and like the giant, the mounds and everything with like the natives and everything. And I mean, how many mounds exist and how many mounds have been undug and how many mounds still exist out there? I mean, we're looking at these things like they could be giants, but I mean, it could go on two sides. It could be that maybe, yes, some of them are giant bones, but on the other half, I mean, these things could have been ancient Sasquatch burial sites, and we're looking at them as giant bones, and then they're trying to hide that evidence, getting into the whole conspiratorial side of it. But, I mean, they could have literally just been Sasquatch burial mounds that we kind of just grouped all of this stuff together and kind of threw the phenomenon out with the bathwater. And, I mean, even within government organizations too, it's like if they find weird stuff like this, they might just try to throw it off to the side because they just don't want to throw off people's paradigms or, you know, make people uncomfortable realizing that there could be other things that exist out there. I mean, even for like park's sake, not trying to seem like there's some kind of like big conspiracy or anything like that about it, but I've talked to enough people that work at parks where it's like this unspoken rule that it's like if there's a sighting in an area, they'll block off the area and say, oh, there was bear in the area. People in DNR, it seems like they talk about this stuff. They know about this kind of stuff. They kind of just kind of keep it on the back burner. But I mean, even theoretically, if you were a DNR, if you were a park ranger, worked for the DNR, and you found a Sasquatch body, you know, more than likely you're going to get rid of it. One, off of, you don't want people to be scared to go to the park. Two, you also don't want people to flood to the park and possibly destroy the park. Like, there's so many different factors that come in that I feel like if there are people that are out in the woods all the time and they're finding they do potentially find Sasquatch bodies here and there, it's going to be one of those things that maybe you'll know about it locally. Maybe there'll be some little things that get talked about a little bit. But for the most part, it's like for the park's own safety, it almost feels like it would be better to just cover it up as far as they're looking at it from like the park's perspective.
I've talked to and interviewed quite a few people over the years who do believe that park rangers and other government officials are in on knowing Bigfoot exists and that they cover it up. And I have interviewed people in the past who have had experiences where they found tracks and had experiences and called park rangers out. And in one particular case, there was a park ranger that responded out and actually went over to the tracks that were found and kind of scuffed them out with his boot. And, you know, I get it on some level. If he thought they were just bear tracks and he wasn't trying to raise any kind of alarm with these people or any of the other folks that were possibly visiting that area, I get that. Look, as a former police officer, if I were in that situation and I was a park ranger and I thought that somebody had found some tracks that were possibly related to Bigfoot or even a bear in the area, I would say, look, you know, just be careful. Keep your head on a swivel. We know there's wildlife out here. Just be careful. Make sure you put your food up. Just go through the litany of things that you would tell people in that situation, but not try to cause any more alarm. Can the flip side of that be true? And this park ranger knew exactly what these folks had found and knew that Bigfoot was in the area and was just trying to avoid having that conversation and avoid raising any more alarm? Sure, that could be the case as well. Ultimately, I don't believe that park rangers or any officials, frankly, that are associated with the government in any level are involved in any type of a vast conspiracy to cover up the existence of Bigfoot. Are there park rangers out there in their areas that they patrol all the time? Are they aware that Bigfoot exists? Absolutely. I think they probably get a lot of reports from people that are passing through the area that have weird experiences, and they call the rangers and they have those kind of conversations on the spot, and then they move on to something else.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply.
And we are back, so let's hop right in. I always love doing words of wisdom from the guests to the listeners. If there's any words of wisdom you could bestow on the listeners, what might it be?
I think the last time I was on the show, my words of wisdom were, don't eat yellow snow. I'll try to be a little bit more poetic this time around and say, the truth never changes. That's one of the things that I address in my new book that came out in March of this year, Sasquatch Unleashed, The Truth Behind the Legend. Ultimately, when it comes to Bigfoot and other cryptids and other unknown phenomenon, everyone's truth is a little bit different. But the thing about the truth is, no matter what it is for you, it never changes.
Where might people be able to find you on the internet?
Podcast you can hear anywhere, any podcast app. I do have a YouTube channel. We don't do a ton of stuff on YouTube, but there is a Sasquatch Odyssey YouTube channel. I do have a Backwoods Horror Stories YouTube channel. I tell stories there. I narrate stories. It's also an audio podcast, so you can get that anywhere you listen to podcasts. And then Wayne and I host a show called That Bigfoot Podcast. It is definitely not your grandpa's Bigfoot encounters show. We don't do encounters on That Bigfoot Podcast. We talk about everything. We get into hoaxers. We talk about what pisses us off about Bigfoot. We examine evidence. It's just a really cool conversation. We occasionally have guests over there. I think we've only had one or two guests at this point. It's usually just Wayne and I. It's like we're sitting around a campfire talking about what might have pissed us off that day or what we're excited about with Bigfoot, but it's all Bigfoot related. So if you're into Bigfoot and you want to get away from the encounter stuff, and then obviously Sasquatch Odyssey is all about the encounters. Like I said, we just celebrated it. We're over 500 episodes at this point, so there's plenty of back catalog to go back and listen to. On Sasquatch Odyssey, you can get it anywhere you get your podcast.
Well, man, we appreciate you making the time to come on today. Looking forward to having you on again at some point when you have a little bit more time. And hopefully next time, man, we can dive into what you're mentioning that you can't talk about yet.
Yes, that undisclosed location, doing undisclosed things with undisclosed people. Yeah, we'll definitely do it.
If anyone would like to get in touch with me for any reason whatsoever, you guys can email me at inquiriesofallrealitypodcast@outlook.com. Or you guys can get a hold of me through social media, Instagram or Facebook. Or you guys can also get a hold of me through the submission forms, which are available on the Linktree. One of which is to contact me, and the other one is to report those encounters. So while you're at it, don't forget to report those encounters to either that or through the email at ommencounterreports@outlook.com. Every single thing that I mentioned throughout the show is all available in the Linktree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, hope you guys enjoyed the conversation. I hope it connected some dots for you in your own reality, and I'll catch you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody.